Hey, resilient recruiters, here's reason number two why you must attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. And that is the keynote presentations. You'll gain exclusive insights from other top billing recruiters and entrepreneurs who've either scaled their own desk or built multi-seven-figure businesses. I myself will, of course, be one of the speakers, but the presentations that I am the most excited about are not professional speakers and trainers, but other recruitment business owners like you who will be unpacking their most effective tactics and strategies. No theory, just practical insights from people who are in the trenches, ordinary people achieving extraordinary results. There's still time to take advantage of the early bird pricing. By the way, it's happening on September 17th and 18th. So don't miss out. Reserve your place now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Bert Miller. Bert is the co-founder and chairman of Protus Global, which is an award-winning search and recruitment firm in Florida with a 20-strong team specializing in food and beverage, CPG, cannabis, and hospitality industries. He's also the CEO of Ace Talent Curators, and he's the president and CEO of MRI Network. MRI is a recruitment organization that offers consulting, training, contract staffing, and community building to over 325 search firms worldwide. Bert is also an active speaker, mentor, advisor, and investor, and he is a fellow podcast host. His podcast is the MRI Network podcast, and he also has a video podcast series called Beyond the Bottom Line, which features interviews with CEOs and leaders across categories on issues impacting the world of work. Bert, welcome. Thank you so much for doing this.
Mark, glad to be with you. Thank you.
Fantastic. I think you have the best audio of any guest I've ever had, maybe apart from Joe Mullings. It's probably on a par with his. So I thank you for that.
Well, in full disclosure, I'm sitting in Joe's studio.
Okay. That explains that. Yeah. Fantastic. No, it's so nice when people have, you know, the right equipment. It just really elevates the quality of the listener's enjoyment. So listen, we know a lot of people in common. This is our first time meeting. I'm excited to learn from you. You've been running Protus since 1995. Could you just briefly talk about your recruitment journey leading up to taking the role of president at MRI?
Yeah, my background, Mark, coming out of school in 1985, I went to work for the Gallo Winery. I was put into a distributor in Indianapolis, Indiana. Worked there for about 4.5 years. A headhunter called me, ironically enough, and introduced me to Revlon North America. So then I went over and worked at the cosmetic giant Revlon North America for about 6.5, 7 years. My children got to a certain age where I wanted to coach and raise them because I was spending all my time in New York and I lived in Indianapolis, Indiana at that time. So I was looking at different businesses and did a lot of research, and the human capital recruitment space was one that in a foreseeable future was going to have a supply and demand opportunity, which we're feeling today very much so. And so I took a shot and launched Protus Global from scratch, along with Laura Gonzalez at the time. And we kicked it off. We started in consumer products where my background lies. And then we had a very successful first, 25 years in that space, and gave me the opportunity in the middle of around June 2019 to acquire MRI Network.
Wow, that's amazing. So why did you make that decision then, Bert?
To acquire MRI Network? Look, MRI Network, it's a terrific brand. It's an iconic company relative to the space that we're in, the talent access space that we're in, Mark, over the years. And, you know, it's a 55-year-old plus company launched and co-founded by Alan R. Schoenberg, a legend in our industry. And what had happened, it really provided an opportunity for us to go through and work with a company that had gone through some serious growth and then really lost its identity as the market started to shift in the early 2000s and into the 2010s. And during that time of losing this identity, it lost a little bit of leadership, vision, and North Star, and so really lost its luster for a period of time. But what a great, great, awesome brand. And it gave us the opportunity to acquire the company, reinvigorate the company, and put together a plan to transform the organization, which we've been able to do. And it's been a really fun ride.
Wow, that's awesome. So was Protus already a franchisee of MRI, and then you decided to acquire the whole network? Or?
Yes. Yeah, we've been a franchisee since 1995.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. No, that's all making sense. Yeah. MRI really has shaped the recruitment industry over the last few decades. And if you think of the number of offices, the number of people who've been born and grown up in that network. And, even a lot of my fellow trainers, if you trace back their origin story, then it leads back to MRI. So it's definitely a brand that people are very familiar with, certainly in the United States, but probably in a lot of countries as well. So what is what's the kind of future vision then? Where are you taking this?
Yeah, it's interesting, Mark, and you alluded to the history of MRI. I mean, if you think about the people you've met in your background, tens of thousands are people like the folks that you know that have been trained by MRI offices, or MRI and MRI offices. Our franchisees have made, over the history of the 55 years, over 820,000 placements and generated well over $17 billion. In revenue. So that's part of the iconic brand that helped build our industry. And where we're going from now, today, when we're going forward, is we want to introduce into the industry that how to basically move from a one-to-one conversation to a one-to-many, and bringing a new a way of learning around digital and going to the one-to-many and bringing a different mindset to our industry. Because look, anybody out there can go and acquire a training course. They can grab a marketing piece, but what they don't have is experts and subject matter experts that can put it all together in one spot, where all you have to do is tap into it. In other words, a platform you can plug into. If you're an executive search firm, you can just plug into what we offer. And that's really what we're doing, is we're taking people down the road to future-proof their businesses in a cyclical, really a cyclical industry.
Let's dive into that then, because that's a topic that is very important to me as well, is the idea of blending, the classic old school sales and recruitment qualities and techniques and strategies, and taking the best of that, but then really blending that with a much more modern digital approach to engaging with the market, both clients and candidates, as well as employees, and scaling from there. So how would you describe, or how would you recommend that search firm owners can future-proof their business?
Yeah, there's a couple things. One, don't go too far any one way. And I think we were a little bit misunderstood at that beginning, Mark, when we introduced digital into our network, and that we're telling people not to be on the phone and just sit back and wait. There's going to be inbound calls coming. There's a multitude of opportunities. And, of course, we're not saying that. If you go back to what you talked about earlier, I mean, the phone batted number one in the lineup, and the phone is still the most important weapon that we have, is engaging with humans and having those discussions with those individuals to put them in the best position to win in their careers. It just now bats different, in a different spot in the lineup. It might bat third or fourth, and we have these other tools and methodologies that get us to many more people quicker than they have in the past, by making 100 calls every single day and hoping to connect with someone. And I think the other opportunity as well, Mark, is by creating a digital presence and providing information, education, aspiration, inspiration. If you want to do that as well, and not really focusing on yourself, really makes you a voice in your industry, a subject matter expert in the sector that you work in. And when you start to become known, become an expert in your space, you become somebody as a thought leader in your space, and that it gives you a better chance to win and for people to lean in, and you can win business.
Absolutely. I think we're in total alignment on this topic, Bert. So what are some of the methodologies that MRI, you know, members of the MRI network are embracing in order to become a voice, a thought leader in their, you know, in their specific niche sector or ecosystem?
Yeah, it's really, when we first started 2.5, almost 3 years ago, Mark, it's really interesting. We had a few that really understood where we were going and just jumped on right away. And many of those people are seeing the success. Others, as we've continued to better on our end, you know, communicate better and define what we really mean by, you know, from a digital approach and really not losing sight of the fact of the fundamentals of the business that you alluded to earlier, we have more and more people coming on board to do that. And there's some techniques that we've introduced back to the network, whether it be, pulling out headlines or 10-4-2 strategy around using 10-4-2, specifically using LinkedIn. There are tools that we're using and how to engage people on LinkedIn and really helping folks understand, rather than just posting jobs, and people do that, but rather than just posting jobs and becoming part of the white noise that you see on LinkedIn, again, how to articulate, communicate, engage in the marketplace so you're leaving that white noise and going to a different room that has a more of a one-to-one effect, if you will. And again, it sets you apart from your competition. And these are the things that we're teaching many of our owners and their teams.
100%, absolutely. Could you explain 10-4-2? I'm not familiar with that expression.
Yeah, that's one. The Joe kind of coined the 10-4-2 and what really worked for him. And we've plugged that into our network. And essentially, you sit down on a weekend or every weekend, you make that time. Who are your targets? You start to identify targets, meaning you take a company and you go 2 or 3, 4 people deep around their executives, and you start to put them in list, and you start to follow them on LinkedIn. As they engage the platform, you then see how they're engaging the platform. And at that point in time, you may pick 10, you may like 10 things throughout the course of your journey on the space of your targets. And so 10 times you like. About every 4 times, you will write copy and make a comment, intelligent comment, not just, hey, that's a great post. I mean, that doesn't do a whole lot, but really write something with depth around the comment, maybe have an opinion or take a position on something, tag the person that you're targeting. And then 2 times, you will then share the post that person has made. And you write intelligent copy, you share that with your network. And lo and behold, what happens is these executives start to see your thought leadership, how you're engaged in the marketplace. They in turn start to engage with you, and you become known to those executives. You're just really warming up the funnel, if you will. And then as you continue to do your reach out, they start to understand who you are. And once you become a thought leader and you have that reach in your space, you're just seen differently than the person that's just, you know, constantly leaving voicemails.
Absolutely. I like this concept of 10-4-2. What's the cadence of this? Is this a week, like, is this per week or is this per, what's the time frame for the 10 likes, the 4 comments, the 2 shares?
It's every single week, and you have your targets. So you really have to, you carve out that time, Mark, and your key targets that are making the comments. You then are liking 10 of them. You're then making comments on 4 of them, and then you are sharing 2 of them. Now, there's no set number. It could be 8-5-3. It could be what, right? It's 10-4-2, which is it's really what worked for us, and that's been most effective in the way we go to the marketplace. The resulting impact for some of your listeners, our network-wide revenue from a retained perspective. So you're now moving up the food chain where you're talking and you're getting better opportunities, not better opportunities, but higher opportunities within the food chain of a company. We've increased over the last 2.5 years our network's retained business by 22%.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, it's definitely a business model that we encourage our coaching clients to embrace, because, you know, to move away from the chaos of and frustration of contingency recruitment to more mutually committed searches where you're partnering with the client and they actually listen to you and respect you and follow your advice, and you can do your best work, you know, because you're confident of getting paid at the end of it.
Are you worried about keeping your recruitment firm up to date with the latest technology? After all, your clients expect you to be ahead of the curve. But how do you select the right tech for your recruitment firm and make sure that you earn enough new business as a direct result to make back the cost of your investment? Which is why our friends at iIntro provide in-depth coaching alongside their technology to help you get the most out of your investment. They offer an extensive suite of tools, but let's just take one example, their behavioral assessment tool. It's built right into their online system, so you don't have to buy or learn a whole new platform. They also include training on how to use behavioral assessments to improve your pitching technique while also increasing the longevity of your placements to a staggering 96% after 12 months. For a free demo of iIntro's suite of recruitment tools, including behavioral assessment, just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retained. Remember, when you engage with our sponsors, you also help support this podcast. Just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retained, then follow the instructions to get started.
But circling back to the LinkedIn strategy then, with the two shares, I'm just curious because I can see the benefit from the point of view of getting the attention of the target that you've identified, because LinkedIn will notify them that you've shared their, you know, their post. On the other hand, in real terms, it doesn't actually help them particularly or you, in the sense that we study the LinkedIn algorithm and what you know, how it works as best as anyone can. You know, nobody really knows how it works, but based on observation of thousands of posts across our clients and what gets organic reach and what doesn't, we've found that sharing has like zero impact. The algorithm just does not reward it at all. Whereas liking and commenting in particular seems to be the commenting that is the best thing for creating momentum with a post. But is that the intention? Is it that when you share something, the person would then feel appreciative and it would get their attention?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mark. The LinkedIn does not reward sharing a great deal. Certainly original content that has relevancy and it connects with your audience, certainly organically, the algorithm rewards that quite well. And then of course, engaging with the post of your target, making comments, tagging a few folks or whatever the case may be, certainly that helps as well. We share just to give pay homage to that person that's made that post, and right. And the few people that do see it, they start to see what is being shared, and all of a sudden your name is popping up in different places and through different actions and methodologies of sharing and posting and commenting. But no question, the algorithm does not reward sharing like original content or comments.
Okay, I understand. That makes sense. And these 10 targets, are they target clients or target candidates or a mixture?
It's a combination thereof. So if there's XYZ company that I want to penetrate in a space, I will have, let's say they have 3 to 5 targets. I will put those on my list. I start to monitor as they're posting from whoever's active in that organization, one or two, and then I use this approach. You'll also see the other thing you can do is is really what we call, you know, the headline approach. And that is where you'll have somebody post an article. So one of your targets post articles, or the company post an article, and you go through the article, you pick something out of that article that is interesting, and you put your own spin relative to an opinion, or you kind of write against whatever that headline is. You kind of create your own headline with that article, and then you share it, but not share it back, but you go ahead and post it back, pay homage to them as well by targeting them as well, and including the individual and the company. And what that does too, as well, is then their audience, both the company as well as the people following those organizations, start to see how you are actually commenting and making thoughtful points relative to whatever that might be, whatever that topic might be.
You know, it's extremely effective, and as you say, warming up your funnel and getting on people's radar prior to, you know, reaching out to them, and often you'll generate an inbound conversation through this activity as well before you've even taken that next step of contacting them. But the objection, I'm sure that you hear this and I hear it, is this sounds like a lot of work. You know, how much time is this going to take? And so, you know, what do you advise people in terms of how often and how long to spend on this type of strategy?
Yeah, that's a great point, Mark. And we hear that all the time. There's a few factors that come into play. First, I'll just start by saying it's an and, not or. You know, it's not, do I do this versus the phone, or do I do the phone versus this? If you're really committed and this industry is your career, it's an and. That's first of all. The second thing that comes into mind is that people many times don't know how to get started. They don't realize the cadence and the work that it does take throughout the course of each week. Certainly at the beginning, they show you at least 3 posts a week, up to 5, but you know, you see the best of the best doing, you know, 6 or 7 posts a week and with various types of cadence toward how they're posting. But at the and mark is that, again, if this is your career, you got to continue to think that you're doing business development or you're doing recruiting by writing and sharing thought leadership in your particular space. And as you become an expert, then that's when those folks certainly start to lean in. And so the core of your day is doing what you normally do, and understand part of what you normally do will change, because if you are in essence doing this early in the morning, or you're writing late in the afternoon, keeping that content to post in the morning, usually that's the best time, is to post in the morning and throughout the day, depending on your space. And then you're going to find that you're starting to engage people that know you, but you may not even know them. Either they're leaning in, they're engaging you, or you call and they've heard of you. But it takes consistency over a 6 or 8 month period of time. What we see is people trying it for 2 or 3 months. They're not getting the momentum and traction that they want, Mark, and they kind of give up. And they give up just a little bit too soon. But consistency is the key. It will in fact pay dividends.
Absolutely right. It's the analogy I use is going to the gym. You can't work out for a couple of weeks and then expect miracles. Like when you look in the mirror, you're going to look pretty much the same, right? But then give it 3 months of commitment and consistency, and 6 months and 12 months. And, you know, that's where you really end up in a totally different place. So love it. What would be another example of a one-to-many sort of strategy that you guys are getting results with?
Well, I mean, if for those that are down range a little bit, Mark, you know, and I'll just use myself, you know, with Beyond the Bottom Line, I've created a podcast. I've been fortunate to have some really terrific guests. And that's certainly then at that point really starts to broaden your reach. You're able to have some interesting conversations. You know, I've had, you know, Chris Voss. I've had the head of North America for Bacardi, the CEO of Hostess company. And again, I work in the consumer product space, so all that makes sense. Chris Voss, you know, around negotiation. So he brings a certain element and visibility that is really, really important. And so for those that create a podcast, I mean, that's another way that you're touching at the beginning tens, then hundreds, and then hopefully thousands of people.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sometimes people feel overwhelmed at the idea of launching a podcast, but you know, the benefit, I love doing that. I would do it even if there wasn't a commercial benefit of doing it, because I love learning and I love meeting, you know, exceptional people like you. And but having said that, it's also been the best thing I've ever done for my business. And we actually put together a course on how to launch a podcast for your recruitment business, because we had quite a few people asking us for help on it. It's cool that you met Chris Voss. I run a little book club for our clients, and Never Split the Difference was one of the titles that we actually studied. So that's amazing. And I'd just be curious, like, how did you set that up? Did you just reach out to him, and like, what was your approach?
Well, it was really a stroke of luck to some extent. We ended up working with a few different people to come speak at our United Conference in 2019. And Chris was one of our speakers. And so I had the opportunity to spend some time with Chris. We connected, became friendly. We started talking on the phone a little bit, and we exchanged text and from time to time, and just kind of kept the relationship going. And then when I launched Beyond the Bottom Line, he certainly was one that at the appropriate time, you know, once we got a little bit of traction, I just texted Chris and asked him to be on the show. And, you know, his team worked with us and we were able to get him on here. It was fantastic.
Brilliant. Love that. So, Bert, one of the topics I've heard you talk about is the great realignment. Could you speak a little on that topic?
Yeah, the great realignment. You know, everybody started talking about the great resignation, and part of that is, I think we started to, what happened over the last 2.5 years only accelerated what was already underway and happening. We just got there 10 years. We got there 10 years earlier because what's happened in the last couple of years, and the power of the individual is coming into play. And so you start to see in the media pick up on this term, the great resignation. And there are people leaving the workforce. Many of the boomers are making decisions to say, hey, you know, I have, my purpose of life is totally different and I'm getting out. But a far majority of people, it's not about the great resignation. It's really what I call the great realignment. Some have said the reshuffle or whatever you want to call it. And so the dynamics that are coming into play around hybrid model working, flexible working, I'm not really into remote per se, and people use that term remote, but I do like flexible and I do like hybrid. And I think companies did not react or respond enough over the last several years to the individual. And now the power is with the individuals I mentioned earlier. And so those organizations are now stepping back. The ones that really want to be proactive are stepping back and taking a look at their organizations, things that they need to do, what they have to do about not only attraction, but retention. The best thing you can do around hiring and building your organization is rehire your people all the time. So keep the ones you have and then continuing to attract the talent that you can track by being able to storytell your North Star and help them understand how you're fitting in into today's work, world of work, and looking forward. And so I don't think it was the great resignation per se. I just think it's a realignment. People are leaving, you know, one team and going to another, and you're going to see certain people win and others not be as fortunate.
I love your expression to always be rehiring your existing team members. That's a clever expression. I worked one of my first bosses in recruitment. I remember him telling me, Mark, never stop selling to your staff. You know, once they're on board, you know, throughout their onboarding, throughout their first year, and then, you know, continuously after that, you always have to keep selling the opportunity. And he went on and sold his company for millions of pounds shortly thereafter. But I never forgot that. What do you mean by storytell your North Star?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of things. And going back to your point that you made on the rehiring, look, I don't want to confuse people and say be soft or give people everything they want. You know, there's empathy with accountability, if you will. It's showing people that you have an open mind and from a leader, you're showing agility in your leadership, where you have operational excellence, innovation. Are you constantly looking to get better? And then be able to tell your story. And many times if you talk to some folks and you're having a conversation about their company, it's like a long explanation about what they do. And what you have to be able to do is not talk in generalities about your organization, but be able to tell a story in a concise, substantive manner about your organization and where you're going. And so, you know, when I talk about Protos, I really spend time talking about the platform, about how people can plug in, you know. And for your listeners, it's not to be soft in terms of rehiring your people. It's about continuing to let them know you care, continuing to offer a platform that makes their life better. In other words, they can accomplish their scorecard by being part of your team, and they feel a purpose and a sense of pride about what they do in their career. And again, the accountabilities, they know we all need to be pushed in some form or pulled at some point in time and respected. And by just having an accountability and practice, knowing every individual is different and giving them that kind of place to come to work every day, you tend to then rehire your people through that method. So it's not going out and, you know, just doing a bunch of high fives and, you know, tell them how great they are. You know, they can get that in a lot. If they're really talented, they can get that in a lot of places, Mark. It's a really, the challenge to a leader is being able to then continue to educate, help them learn and get better every single day. And part of that is accountability and you providing the tools for them to get better.
Interesting. Love it. So tell me more about the storytelling aspect though, because that's not something I've heard a great deal in terms of a leadership principle.
Yeah. I mean, when we hire people at Protos, we take them through the history of Protos. And so we're 27 years in. Why would you take people through the history of Protos if they're just starting on year 27? I think it's real important to be able to walk them through the story, the origin, the foundation, the core values of an organization, the inflection points over those 2.5 decades, both the good and others and other learning opportunities that have occurred. And what you do by doing that and you walk them through and be able to tell your story of the organization is that as they go, they take their journey with Protos Global, certain data points will hit them. And those data points will take them back to the story they heard in their training. And they now start to become part of that DNA. They start to connect and the connective tissue starts to come together with the organization. And when people feel like they're part of something versus working at a company, then you're going to get the best out of them. And obviously, if they feel they're part of something, they feel like they have a thumbprint or they're having a point of influence on the success and outcome of the organization.
Interesting. No, I love that. I read an interesting book called Story Brand by Donald Miller. I don't know if you've read that. It's more aimed at branding from the point of view of attracting customers, but you could equally apply the same sort of thought process to attracting and retaining employees as well. Is there a particular framework that you have kind of internalized for storytelling in a business context?
Toward my team, Mark?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just wondered how this has come up and become part of what you do. Like, what was your reference point for that?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Look, when you if you look at brands, many times brands are really good at talking to the consumer. Their consumer branding is generally very, very strong. And if you think about how and you know, some of the buying signals that go through and how we make decisions, we buy on emotion. We justify with logic, right? So we buy with emotion. And so that's the consumer connection that companies over the years, when they were doing their consumer branding. What companies many times failed to do and then later became aware of, they called it employer branding. And that's a term that I really, I'm not a fan of employer branding. We like hiring brand because hiring brand is you're becoming to be part of something. It's not about the employer. Part of hiring is mutual. And so it, by helping people, you know, understand the why you're doing certain things, Mark, and you're walking the journey, by building your hiring brand and then showing them how to build their own personal brand, then what you're able to do is you're able to connect the two. And people feel like, again, once they feel like they're part of the connective tissue or they're part of the DNA, even though you're helping them build their own individual brand, their personal brand, but it aligns in very much from a value system, it aligns with the hiring brand. And so we have these conversations on a regular basis in our organization. And it's not always accepted. I mean, we have people that still struggle to get themselves out there a little bit, and we have to continue to work on it. We have a couple of people having success, which now is going to allow others then to have that same success. And all during that time, we're really talking about the hiring brand of Protus, because Protus Global is kind of a part of that, and it really allows for people to connect with it. So that's how we do it internally. But the important thing is give people the why versus just telling them what to do.
It's an interesting distinction between employer brand versus hiring brand. I've not considered that before, but it has a better, I think that's better. And it's interesting what you're saying about personal brand, because a lot of recruitment business owners seem to be afraid to let their team members build their own personal brand because they want to control everything, and they're maybe worried about people going off and, you know, setting up in competition or whatever. And I think that's counterproductive, that the business will be stronger if each of your recruiters and leaders are those thought leaders and subject matter experts that we talked about earlier, and have a network that is robust, and they've got those relationships, and they've got their voice, as you said, in their segment of the market, then that can only come back to benefit the firm. But what is your philosophy on this?
Yeah, I was smiling because, you know, I have talked to firm owners that are reluctant to help educate, pay for education, or invest in technology to help their folks do their own personal branding in their organization. Look, my thought is this. One, as I've told a couple of the owners of these firms, I said, look, they're not calling you because of your company name anyhow. They're calling back, or they're doing repeat business because of the individual. This has been going on for years and years. It was just done by phone, and people, they had a connection with that particular recruiter, and that recruiter, they were calling because of that recruiter. They weren't, many times companies don't even know the name of the company they're working with, if we want to be really honest about it. Certainly in the past, and they're becoming more educated today because of the branding aspect, but they were calling because of the individual that they were working with. And that individual was doing the quality of work, delivering talent, quality talent in a good period of time, and filling a position and solving a problem for that organization. That's always been done. That's always been done. So I, from my perspective, I'm like, why not? Why not help they're already doing that. Prop your individuals up. Give them a personal brand, help build them landing pages in your organization, help them learn how to use it, help them provide technology to know, you know, who, you know, where's when I'm sending out, when I'm doing my landing page, who's looking at it, where are they doing it? If I send something out, who's opening it, and they forward it to somebody else. If you're putting some technology in place to help your team do that, then in fact you're really giving them something that they may not be able to build on their own, number one. But more importantly, you want to make sure that you're doing the rehiring of your team anyhow. I think people that make decisions based on control and fear end up with what they don't want to happen happens anyway.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Could you say more about what you mean by landing pages in this context?
Yeah, I mean, what we're going to be doing in 2022 for our team. We're going to be building them their own personal landing pages. So the idea of a personal landing page is it gives them an opportunity to go out and push it out through a piece of technology and organic market and some push through paid. And so that individual that's willing to do it and put in the work, they will have their own personal landing page around roles, newsletters, things that they want to communicate into their space, their thought leadership, and that'll be pushed out, and they now are propped up in their particular sector and space. And that's what we're doing. We're helping our team build those out in 2022.
That's cool. I like that. Is that, would it basically sit, I'm just understanding the practical components of this. So would that be within the Protus website? It's like a page within the Protus website, but it's all about them and their niche. Is that the idea?
Yeah, it looks just like part of the website, the branding, the look, everything. But yes, it'll be within their niche, correct.
Got it. Okay, you know, that's powerful. That's really cool. So circling back, we touched on the great realignment. But to what extent can we, what are the risks here for recruiters, and how can we harness the changes that are happening in the market so that, we are at the forefront rather than left behind?
Yeah, interesting. I mean, Mark, I think when we just do what we set out to do every single day and be consistent in what we're doing in our approach, and that entails proper planning, learn what's going on in your sector, go deeper in your dig, what we call dig is your territory, discipline, industry, geography. Be able to, we have a dig, but in many respects, we're not going deep enough in that funnel down the dig to understand. So you have ancillary, connective opportunities within your space that have depth. So if I'm food and beverage, right? Well, if I'm placing salespeople, marketing, supply chain, and food and beverage, that's fantastic. We go a little bit deeper and understand what that might look like. You also have ingredients. You have packaging around, companies that make the glass or the labeling as well. Then what is the technology around supply chain through automation, robotics? And you continue to go down that funnel. It all comes back to the food and beverage. And so I think what salespeople can do is continue to work on their learning and understanding their space. Mm-hmm. Also look at their individual dig and understand what's going on there as well. And if I want to grow that and I want to expand a little bit, what plugs in pretty easily within my particular interest. And so when I think food and beverage, again, you have the packaging, you have your ingredients, you have various things that our people should be looking at and learning more about. Also technology. If you think about what's happening around the application of technology, whether it be in the supply chain, transportation, delivery, you now have Kroger here in the U.S. that has just done a deal where they'll be doing delivery through drone. So what that opens up a whole nother set of opportunities within that food and beverage sector as an example.
Interesting. Okay, fantastic. And then I like the acronym of DIG. That's a great one. And of going deeper, follows that analogy, which is cool. And what do you think, the recruiters who are maybe failing to capitalize fully on the opportunity of the current market, what do you think they're missing, or what are the mistakes that you see people making?
Yeah, the I think it depends on the individual. I mean, you have people that are in, I'll break it down by tenure versus, so in other words, you have a long-time vet, you have a midterm vet, and then you have rookie to early career. Rookie to early career is they don't know what they don't know yet, and they're learning as they go. If they stay the course and they continue, once again, be a learner. You just have an avid appetite for learning the industry. The biggest mistake I see there for the early career people is they start losing confidence in the blind faith that they have to have in this industry. And so they stop doing the little things. Ultimately, they see that it's not working, or they feel that it's not working, even though it is, and they quit just a little bit too early. And those are some of the mistakes, is really getting off the path, not the line. There's no line in this industry, but there is a path we need to go down, and we need to stay within the guardrails. And so we get outside those guardrails, we start lacking success. And then ultimately, we feel like we failed and we leave the industry, or we have to level set. We want to stay in the industry. Midterm, that's when folks have had some success. You know, they're billing, they're making money, they're making a living in this industry. They really don't know at the moment how to go to the next level. They get a little bit bored at times. They don't know the direction, and they're not taking initiative and accountability to work on their craft as much as they want. That's the biggest mistake I see. They come in, they do what they're supposed to do during the course of the day, 5 o'clock, whatever it hits, and they get out. But they're not doing any off the field work, if you will. They're not in that weight room each and every single day that they should be to continue to develop their skills. And things I like to say is, you become a champion not during the season, you become a champion during the off season. So when you're in the office doing what you're supposed to do, that's you're in the game. That's not when you become a champion. You become a champion working on your game. So when you come to the office. And then for the longer term vets, the biggest mistake I see is, this is the way I've always done it. This has always worked for me. I've made some money. These new programs, this digital thing, I don't want to post. I don't like social media, whatever the case may be. It doesn't mean they still can't have some level of success, but they become self-limiting to themselves because they're not open-minded and agile to what's going on in the marketplace. So taking those three personas, those are some of the things I see as mistakes.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's a good way of breaking it down into those sort of stages in your recruiting career, so to speak, and the potential pitfalls. I like that. Looking back over you've been, I guess, 27 years or so in this industry, built up Protus into a really successful firm. What do you think have been the key success factors for you as an owner in growing a firm?
Yeah, that is a great question, especially for those that are out there that are just starting their firm, or for those recruiters out there who are thinking about starting a firm. Look, for me personally, I was not a general manager. I was not a president or a CEO. I grew up in the consumer product space in sales, as a leader, but in terms of running a company day in and day out, operationally, and being what I would say proactive and peeking around the corner and anticipating, and also leading people in an entrepreneurial business is much different than leading people in a corporate business in many ways. You have to continue to learn. So for me, that was something I had to really look in the mirror. So I say this all the time, Mark, we are a work in progress. And, what people see on social media is one thing, but we all know that, there's a dark side in many ways to what we have, and we have our own demons that we have to overcome and opportunities we have to overcome. And that's not a bad thing. That's really an opportunistic thing. And so when people really will look in the mirror and understand what their capabilities are, where they have gaps, and they'll work on that, they will then become a better leader. So for me, that in my journey, that's what I've had to do. And I find myself at 60 years old, continuing to learn every day. I know that I'm not there. And And my team knows that too. And so having that humility and vulnerability doesn't make you weaker in your organization. It actually makes you quite stronger.
100%. Absolutely. So looking back over your growth as a leader, what would you say were, or can you give me an example of a limitation or a deficiency that you identified within yourself that you've had to work in order to either complement in some other way or to improve?
Yeah, flexibility. Really, flexibility was a big one. You know, I have a real life example in that I had an individual that worked for me, you know, 18 years ago that just, she was fantastic. She came out of the gate and was, just kicked ass in her space, took the training and just went after it. And then we went into a recession in, '01 hit, and we know what happened there. Not to mention, we were already in a recession and we had the tragedy as well. And that just compounded everything. And so we had to really start to pull back a little bit at that time, Mark, and manage cash. And part of that was taking her off a salary at that point in time and moving everybody to this commission. And my lack of flexibility and not recognizing what was important to her, she had just bought her new BMW, she got a new home, she was doing her thing, and she was killing it. But I felt like I'd be, you know, everybody else is going to commission, why not her? And so ultimately she left the organization not long after that. And that's the biggest lesson is, you know, we all know this anyhow, it's just how we, knowing and acting are two different things. Each individual has their own thing that they need in order to be sustained in the organization and in their career. And when that happened, that was startling to me. I've had a couple of those here and there throughout my career. And rather than taking it really personal and being upset at them, I had to really look at that and say, you know, I really messed up. I mean, that person might still be with me today. She was, she was outstanding.
Fantastic. I love your taking responsibility and ownership and for the results that show up and whether those are good or not ideal, then really looking at ourselves and thinking, okay, what part did I play in that? And what can I learn from that in order to be better, from now on? So that's fantastic. Bert, is there anything that I've not asked you that you wanted to discuss today?
Oh man, great question. It's funny, Mark, I do the same thing with people on my podcast and they go, I'm not real sure. I mean, so no, I look, at MRI, what I would say about this, if you're an established firm out there in the marketplace and you want a sense of community, you want subject matter experts, you want access to some of the best vendors all in one spot and a platform you can plug into, or you're a recruiter out there and you're thinking about maybe launching your own firm, you know, this is such a great place and a great history and legacy at MRI Network. It's not mine. I'm just a steward of Karen Schoenberg's legacy forward and for MRI. It's a great, great community with great people.
Amazing. So if people want to follow up with you and continue the conversation, Bert, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, just go to my email, Bert, B-E-B-E-R-T, .Miller@MRINetwork.com. You can always DM me on Instagram, Bert Miller MRI, or certainly LinkedIn is always a great place that we connect on and message me via Bert Miller on LinkedIn. So I'll respond. Absolutely will respond.
Fantastic. Well, I'm glad we had this opportunity, Bert, and thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and insights. Appreciate it.
Mark, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.